I'd like to remind everyone that we have a card to sign for Jerry McDonald in the on the desk outside there, and today is the last day for us to sign that because Karen Skillen is going to be sending that this week. So we'd encourage you to think of Jerry and some encouraging words that you can send for him as he's going through some cancer right now. It's really, really difficult for him. You know, we live in a world today that there's many things going on out in the world that we as Christians wonder about, and sometimes we accept things without maybe giving much thought to it. And the Bible is a book of God's truth for our lives. It deals with salvation primarily and with our relationship with Jesus Christ as we become Christians, but it also encompasses all of life. And it is amazing when we look into the Scriptures that we find that we can go to the Scriptures and find truth about issues that are happening in our lives. And sometimes these are more important than we might think when we begin to look at how they are influencing our thinking and our actions in different areas of life. So this morning I'd like us to talk about an issue that we keep hearing a lot about in the news, and that is about the environment and environmentalism. And we want to consider the question, what does the Bible say about environmentalism? You know, there are many threats that we would all agree that we are faced with in our country today. And one of the greatest ones of those is Islamic terrorism that is a threat to all of our way of life, and something that we all need to be aware of and give a lot of thought to, how to deal with that. And then there is still the problem of communism throughout the world. And it seems that it is beginning to grow again in many and being accepted as being maybe something that is good and beneficial. So those are very serious issues. But some of our leaders seem to be saying that the greatest threat that we face today is not those other things, but is the problem of global warming and the environment. And when we hear statements like that, we would question that, but we would wonder, is that true, or what can we say about that, or how can we know if that is true? Because once that is accepted as being the great issue that we're dealing with, then all of our resources are going to be going in that direction and are going to be not going in other directions that maybe they should be going into. But if you were to be interviewed and a news reporter came up and put a microphone in front of you and asked you the question, what do you believe about environmentalism? What would you say? It is something that I believe we all need to give some thought to. And from a biblical standpoint, obviously, as Christians, we would want to be able to give intelligent response of what does God say about this? What is His viewpoint, or what is the Word of God have to say about environmentalism? We hear a lot today about the green movement, and we tend to accept this on the surface as being beneficial, that there's many benefits of that, that it seems that it is a good idea. And we think about recycling and things like that, of not throwing your trash out the window as you're driving down the road, and planting trees, and those seem to be good ideas. And we hear a lot about green energy, that we need to be concerned about the pollution and the type of energy that is being used. And so there's a lot of encouragement of alternative energy and things of that nature, and growing organic crops that does not use pesticides and things of that nature. So it has a lot of different aspects when you think about what is involved in the environmental movement and the environmental propaganda and advertising and promoting of this movement. But in that, we often hear the statement is being made that we need to protect Mother Nature. Now, Mother Nature, that is a term that we ought to give some careful thought to. That how far do we go in accepting this environmental philosophy and point of view? And where do we draw the line as Christians? Now, where does it stop being just a good thing for us all to be supportive and participate? And where does it cross the line and begin to be a deeper message that we need to be aware of? What is the underlying philosophy that is being taught here? What are we buying into when we go along with the environmental movement? You know, on Friday was Earth Day for 2016, April 22nd. And so it is something that is being promoted, you know, very strongly in our schools, and we hear a lot about this being Earth Day. And where does that come from, and what is the history behind Earth Day? Well, one of the goals for this year was that they would promote planting like 1.8 billion trees around the world. And that seems to be a good thing, and everyone, no one would disagree that would be something good, beneficial, to plant more trees. But when we think about Earth Day, what is the history behind it? And what all is involved in it? What exactly is Earth Day? Well, there is a book that is called A Student Manual, and it is in many of the schools today. Not all, I don't think, but many students on Friday, this was something that many of them heard in the schools. And it is a prayer to the earth. And it is used oftentimes, Earth Day is used as a guise for things like being a responsible citizen, for example. And if you don't adhere to the goals of Earth Day, then somehow you're not only being an unresponsible person, you're a poor citizen, and you're self-centered, and you're not in touch with reality, and you need to get with the program. And that is kind of the message that is being communicated. But there's a prayer that students are taught to say and recite in the classroom. And it goes like this: the earth is not dead matter. She is alive. Now begin to speak to the earth as you walk. You can speak out loud or just talk to her in your mind. Send your love into her with your exaltation. Feel your heart touching upon the heart of the planet. Say to her whatever words come to you. Mother Earth, I love you. Mother Earth, I bless you. May you be healed. May all your creatures be happy. Peace to you, Mother Earth. On behalf of the human race, I ask forgiveness for having injured you. Please forgive us, Mother Earth. When we hear that, those words, we begin to see that this is taking on sort of the tone of a religion. There are religious overtones here, very, very loud and clear, that are being passed on to the children. And is this becoming a religion? It is a question that I think deserves to be asked. And we are constantly hearing that there is to be a separation of church and state, that we are not to have prayer in the schools. And yet, here is a prayer that is being prayed to Mother Earth. And children are being influenced in their minds and taught about this. Now, to me, it's interesting when we look into the Bible that we often find principles that address issues like this in places that we might not even be thinking of that. But in the first chapter of Romans, beginning with verse 20, Paul is talking here about the view of the world and the view of God that was held within the Roman society of that first century, the Gentile world, largely speaking. And he begins by saying, "For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse, because although they knew God, they did not glorify him as God, nor were thankful, but became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools and changed the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like corruptible man and birds and four-footed animals and creeping things. Therefore, God also gave them up to uncleanness and the lusts of their hearts to dishonor their bodies among themselves, who exchanged the truth of God for the lie and worshiped and served the creature or the creation rather than the Creator." I think this is very interesting when we think about the environmental movement today. And it is simply pointing out the fact that man has the capacity in his living in this world to look around and see the creation and see the hand of God in the creation, that there is an intelligence and a creative design within the universe that would point to the Creator. But man has the capacity to either submit to that Creator, or if to reject that Creator to serve him, then it ends up being to worship the creation instead. And that was being done there in the first century. So this is not really something new. When we think about this, that there have been those that have worshipped nature and creation instead of God, going all the way back into the ancient times. And that choice is one that men still make today. That we either look at the world and we decide God is the Creator here, and we're going to submit to God and glorify and honor Him as the Creator. Or if we decide, no, I'm not going to give God the glory, what do? Now we turn our attention to the creation and begin to glorify and worship it instead. It's interesting because that is a lot of semblance to that is what we see in the environmental movement today. Now, the Earth Day began in 1970, in April of 1970. In fact, it was the same day, April 22nd, 1970, in places like Washington, D.C. There was huge turnouts here, mostly young people, college students, things like that. And it was a time in 1970 where, during the 1960s, people began to be more concerned about the pollution, things like that. That there were factories that were pouring out smog and pollution into the air. In fact, some of you might remember this. Gary might maybe could comment about this too. But when you would drive by some of the steel mills, and I've heard this, I don't remember it personally, but you would drive by some of the steel mills in places like Pittsburgh, and there would just be spewing out, there would be things falling out from the atmosphere there, pieces of particles, and it was polluting the atmosphere. In fact, there was a river in Ohio that caught on fire. at that time, and one of the large rivers in Ohio was burning for 3 days because of the pollution that was being dumped into the river. And we can remember the smog pollution. Growing up in Southern California, and in California, some of us maybe even here in Seattle would be able to say, remember the days of smog, how bad it was, that you would go into the cities and you'd begin coughing and your chest would begin hurting. Even on a clear day in places like that, and you look out and the sky would just be brown. The pollution would be so bad. So they began to talk about that and the consciousness of it. So the first Earth Day was held in April of 1970. There was huge rallies. There was over a million people turned out for that. Here is a headline the following day from New York Times on the front page. Millions join Earth Day observances across the nation. So it was a huge thing, and it was on the evening news, and it was in all of the newspapers, talking about the speakers and some of the points that were being made there in the Earth Day. And one of the leaders of that was a senator from Wisconsin named Gaylord Nelson. And he spoke at Earth Day, and one of the statements that he made is the fate of the living planet is the most important issue facing mankind. Well, there we have it. That's where I'm saying that there are still people like that who are saying the environment is the number one issue that we need to be concerned about. It's the greatest threat to our life. He made the statement. Interestingly, there at that first Earth Day, he said that in the next 25 years, this was 1970, said in the next 25 years, 70% of the animal population of the Earth is going to become extinct. So he was the organizer. He was one of the ones who planned it through Congress. Another man who spoke was Paul Ehrlich. He was a scientist who, a writer who researched, and he wrote this book called The Population Bomb that came out in the late 1960s. So he was a keynote speaker, and that was one of the topics that there's too many people. The population is growing too fast. The Earth cannot sustain the population. He made the prediction that he said that within the next 10 years, there was going to be between 100 million and 200 million people who were going to die because of overpopulation. Now, the other man who spoke on that, who was really the leader of it, was a young professor from the University of Pennsylvania, named Ira Einhorn. Ira Einhorn. He's the one that is in the right on this picture that you see. And he was well known at the University of Pennsylvania for promoting some of the ideas about environmentalism. Now, something that a lot of people do not know about him, though, is that he later killed his girlfriend that he was living with at the time, and composted her body and planted it under a tree. He planted a tree and planted her body under the tree, and he said that he was returning her to Mother Earth, that she would be, you know, back in touch with nature that way, and it would all be one. It would all be in perfect harmony together. Well, he's serving a life sentence at this time, unless he has gotten out recently, but he was the keynote speaker of Earth Day. And it kind of points out, I think, how the tendency of environmentalism is actually to undervalue human life. That when people began to exalt the creation beyond a certain point, that the result of that is to undervalue and devalue human life. We have too many people. We need to think about the population of the planet. We need to say the survival of the planet. And it is more important. And so the thinking has even reached the point of thinking, we need to do some serious cutting down of the population of the human race. There's too many people on the planet. And millions of people are going to die. So there's a devaluing of human life that is sometimes seen in this movement. Now, the United Nations soon picked up on this. They, looking at the newspapers, saw, look at all of these millions of young people are involved in this movement. This is a potential of something that we need to look into this. And so in 1971 was the first International Earth Day. And it went on from there. In 1972, it was known as the first International Earth Summit. So they began to talk about this, that this is not a local problem. This is a global problem. This is a global problem because if they are spewing out pollution in Mexico, that is going to drift over the border into the United States. So it is a global problem that is going to require a global solution. They began to have these Earth conferences in the 1970s, and they began having them more and more often, and began to make plans about how can we bring a global solution to this problem that is threatening the planet. That word globalism is a word that you need to pay attention when you keep hearing that word so much, globalism. And it goes back to this, that there are people who see that these problems are beyond any one nation. Therefore, their solution is to create an international form of government to solve these problems or come up with a solution for them. Now, 1992, there was the World Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro in South America. Now, over 200 leaders, world leaders, attended this, including President Bush at the time from the United States. And in the World Earth Summit, leaders from around the world were discussing how to solve the problems of environmentalism. As the year 2000 approached, they began to talk in terms of how to solve the problems and deal with the problems in the coming century, the 21st century. And that led to what is known as Agenda 21. Agenda 21 is the environmental solution proposals for the 21st century that has come out of the Earth summits. Now, one of the terms that they have coined is the term sustainability. Sustainability. How is it possible to sustain life on Earth? What steps do we need? What drastic steps do we need to take as soon as possible so that there will be a sustainability? So there is a lot of doomsday talk in the environmental movement that the world is going to, we cannot survive. The world is going to come to an end. We've got to do something. We've got to act quickly. If you look in the dictionary, there is no such word as sustainability. What is sustainability? It has never been in there in the dictionary until they came up with it. But the solution is to impose worldwide standards on every nation. So this Earth Summit kind of exalts and is elevated to the level that it takes precedence over local national government. So that it does away with the borders. It creates an international council that is supposedly going to solve the number one problem of the human race, environmentalism. As they look into these problems, one of the things that they began to look at was the greenhouse gases. Greenhouse gases. And they named seven of these gases. And you know what the number one? Carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide is the greenhouse gas that is most threatening to the planet. Now, in case you don't know it, we all exhale carbon dioxide every time we breathe. So can we all just do this for the rest of the time we're here this morning? Let's not exhale anyone, okay? Because that is threatening the planet. Greenhouse gases is used all the time in growing fruits and vegetables. Growing fruits and vegetables, you want to create a greenhouse effect so that you can grow beautiful fruits and vegetables. And Southern California, for example, they have warm temperatures 6 months of the year. It is one of the fruit and vegetable capitals of the world that feeds the whole world. And yet, globalism, environmentalism, saying that greenhouse gases is threatening the planet. We've got to do something about those greenhouse gases. Another one is methane. Methane gas. And the criminal there that they began to look at is the cows. Because cows emit methane gas. And so the cow became the villain of the environmental movement. Now, we think about cows. That provides the meat, the dairy products, again, for the food that we all need. But they are emitting methane gas. So that is not acceptable. We've got to stop that methane gas. Another one on the list was nitrous oxide, which is laughing gas. Now, if you ask me, we could use more of that, actually, in our world today. Just give it away, you know, so that people would begin to loosen up a little bit. But the environmental movement has identified that these are the pollutants that is requiring a global solution. So they come up with, a lot of the movies have glamorized this, that if we don't do something, the oceans are going to overflow the islands. Now, Al Gore was a speaker of this and wrote a book about it a few years ago. And he predicted another prediction of doomsday, that if we did not act quickly, that the Galapagos Islands that are down off the coast of South America, that the tides were going to submerge the Galapagos Islands. I mean, that is how serious these predictions of disaster. And actually, they have been doing a lot of studies in recent years of the data of, are the oceans rising? Is there any evidence of the oceans rising? And they have come to the conclusion that in 10 years, they have been able to trace that the oceans rose 1.3 inches in the last 10 years, you know, and so if we don't do something, the oceans are going to wash over the whole earth. The data does not support this, is what I'm saying. The scientific data either has to be manipulated or they eventually need to revise the theory behind it, because it just doesn't support the alarming statements and the global disaster predictions that are being made of what's going to happen if we do not step in and impose these tighter restrictions on everyone. So I would like for us to, in the time remaining, to look at what does the Bible say? What can we turn to in the Bible? What does God say about environment, protecting the environment? And those are principles that we can build a foundation of our belief upon. What I would say to all of us is that we need to have a carefully constructed view, biblical view of the world. Everyone has a view of the world. And we should be concerned that our view of our belief system is based upon solid biblical principles. Because when people build a worldview that is not based upon biblical truth, to me, it quickly begins to be connected together into a system that is not based upon biblical truth. For example, I have found this to be true, that I can look at, if I know what a person believes on two or three key issues, I can almost tell you where they will vote on any other issue, because it's all connected. And if you ask the question, well, where do you stand on abortion? Where do you stand on traditional marriage between a man and a woman? And what is your view of protecting our national defense? You know, if you look at those three questions, it's almost like building a triangle. And you triangulate those three things, and you can predict. We say, well, I know how you're going to vote on this issue over here, because it's all connected. And we need to have a biblical foundation when we begin to look at issues, because C.S. Lewis made the statement. He said that the most dangerous ideas are not the ones that you understand and reject. He said, the most dangerous ones are the ones that you assume to be true and you accept without examining them. So when we look at the Bible, first principle that stands out is the earth belongs to God. And in Psalm 24 and verse 1 and 2, the earth is the Lord's, and all its fullness, the world and those who dwell therein. For He has founded it upon the seas and established it upon the waters. And that goes along with Genesis 1 and verse 1, that in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. So the earth belongs to God. And the implied message there is we are to honor God's creation because God made it. Our God made this world, and therefore we should honor His creation. And that should go without saying. And a second principle that we find is that God then gave dominion over the earth to man. God gave man the dominion over the earth. And we find that in Genesis 1 and verse 28. When it says, God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth. Also in Genesis 2:15, the Lord took man and put him in the Garden of Eden to tend and keep it. So Psalm 115 and verse 16, the heaven, even the heavens, are the Lord's, but the earth He has given to the children of men. Well, obviously the message there is we are stewards of creation, and we do have a responsibility then to care for the earth and to exercise care over the earth. Man is given that responsibility. Number three, we find that the earth reflects the beauty of God. And in Psalms 19, verses 1 and 2, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows His handiwork. Day unto day utters speech, and night unto night reveals knowledge. We look around and we see the beauty of the earth, and we see the amazing resources that God has placed here in the earth for man. And some of them, it took man some time to discover those resources that are in the earth, such as oil and energy and things of this nature. But God has put them there. And gold and silver and precious jewels and vegetables and plants and trees and animals. And God has put these all here for our use and for our good. So the earth is filled with the glory of God, and the message of that is we are to enjoy the earth, but we're not to worship the earth. Earth is not Mother Earth. The earth is created by God, and God is the one that we're to worship. We enjoy the earth and we take care of the earth, but we should not get confused and think that we are to worship Mother Earth in some way. Number four, man is placed above the creation and is uniquely responsible to God. So in Psalm 8 and verse 3 and 4, David said, "When I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have ordained, what is man that you are mindful of him, and the son of man that you visit him?" God has placed man then in a unique and exalted role in the creation, above the other animals. And when we think of that, the principle that is found is that all living things have value, but all living things do not have equal value. This is where sometimes when we hear from the environmental movement, there will be people who are needing to live in an area, for example, and there is room there for people to live, and yet they will begin to go in and do expensive studies, and they will say, "Well, the owl is buried in here, or has his nest here, and so we cannot allow any building or any development of this area because of the owls or because of the silverfish in the water. We cannot water the plants and grow and have food and people have jobs because there is the concern of the survival of the silverfish in the streams and things of this nature." It gets out of balance. People lose sight of the fact that man is in the position that God has put man in the image of God, that all living things are of value, but they're not all of equal value. And then the number five is that God commands protecting the land and the animals for the common good. We find some principles of that in the Old Testament. When the Israelites were coming out of Egypt and they were going into the land of Canaan to dwell there, God taught them certain principles. One of those was that every 7 years they were to rest the land, leave the land lie fallow every seventh year. And that way the land would heal itself, it would replenish itself. God was teaching them an important principle there. Not to deplete the minerals, that we do have to take care of the earth. Whenever they were to be traveling into the battles and going through some of the territories of the other nations, God taught them that I do not want you to strip the trees that have fruit, that are able to provide food. Do not just go in and randomly tear out the trees. And those are principles that we can all agree that there is to be a responsible care of the environment. Sometimes in the mining, for example, you can go into places like Butte, Montana, and you can see where they have just stripped the mountains and left these big open pit mines. And they have not, you know, it looks terrible. And they have decimated that area and other areas like that, which could have been done differently. It could have been done much wiser than that. But there is a command and a principle to protect the land, the animals, for the common good. Consumption and production need to be balanced with conservation. And then the final principle that we can see that is found in the Bible is that Christ's redemption, which is the ultimate purpose, includes creation. That in Romans chapter 8 and verses 19 through 21, Paul talks about this. He said, "For the earnest expectation of the creation eagerly waits for the revealing of the sons of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it in hope, because the creation itself will also be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God." And some of that creation includes man, and that's the ultimate salvation that man is that God's plan, his purpose is to redeem us from sin. But that statement, he includes the creation in it, that God is going to redeem the creation. And when the earth was in the beginning, that God has a purpose of caring for the creation and preserving the creation, that God is concerned about that. So we must treat the earth with the same priority God does. And I feel that those are all valid, very valid biblical principles. But when we begin to look at a movement today like the environmental movement, and we hear some of the statements that are being made and the doomsday predictions and how drastic the measures needs to be taken and placed in the hands of an international body that would decide things for the people of the whole world, that gives me a lot of concern. I'm deeply concerned about the direction that is going, and the thinking and the religious overtones of worshiping the earth and Mother Earth, things of this nature. God has a purpose for our lives to save us from sin. He created this earth. He put us on this earth. It's a beautiful planet that sustains life. Sustainability of this earth is in the hands of God. God is able to sustain us and has done that. And there can be natural disasters, and we can make many mistakes in the environment. We do need to have responsible care of the earth, but we need to keep our focus and our worship directed to God, the one who created this universe. He is the one that deserves the glory and the worship, not the earth itself. And so when those people of the book of Romans, they began to reject the Creator, what did they end up doing? They ended up worshiping the creation instead. And that is the wrong way for us to go in our thinking. Today, if you're here and you're subject to the invitation of Jesus Christ, we hope that you'll respond. Come forward this morning. We extend the invitation of Jesus. Repent of your sins. Confess the name of the Lord and be baptized into Christ for the remission of sins. So we invite you to come as we stand together and sing.
When the Savior calls on us.